Okay, turn with me, if you will. We didn't end on a chapter boundary last time. This week's Torah portion begins in Deuteronomy, or Devarim, chapter 7, verse 12. It ended up last time with the last line being, "You shall therefore keep the commandments and the statutes and the ordinances." That's the Shamar commandment. We're going to see that word again. Shema, O Israel, remember, hear and obey, hearken to the mitzvot, to the chukim and the mishpatim, statutes, judgment, commandments, statutes, and ordinances, which I command you this day to do them. And then it says the following. This is how this one begins. And it's pointed out that basically this first word here is ekev. Ve haya, which is, here it comes, because. Heel is the derivation, it's the root of that. It's an unusual way to say this will happen. But essentially, while it is unusual, that's what it means. Because you do these things, if you will hearken these things, but he's actually saying because you'll do these things. I like that better. And you do and keep these ordinances, then Yahuwah, your Elohim, shall keep with you the covenant and the mercy which he swore on your fathers. And then it says this, and he will love you, bless you and multiply you. Also bless the fruit of your body and of your land, all of your stuff, your corn, your wine, your oil, the increase of your cattle and the young of your flock in the land which he swore to your fathers to give to you. Like we see a number of places in Scripture, particularly in the last few chapters of Deuteronomy, we get this list of blessings. You will be blessed above all peoples. There won't be a single male or female barren among you or among your cattle. And you will see that Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh will take away from you all sickness. Here comes an important thing. I think that's, let's just say an interesting contrast as we look at the world today and see the Ebola pandemic panic that's being foisted on people, all the other diseases, MERS, MRSA, various kinds of staph infections, you name it, there's a disease somewhere, cancer, destruction of immune systems. He will put none of the evil diseases of Mitzrayim, which you know, upon you, but he will put them instead upon all of those that hate you. And you'll consume all of the peoples that Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh is fixing to deliver up to you. Your eyes not to pity them. And here comes this concept that is going to be repeated a lot tonight, too. I'm going to emphasize it. And again, we'll do this compare and contrast things. You are not to serve their gods, for that will be a snare unto you. And I think that's an interesting terminology. We'll come back to that. It'll be a snare unto you. I will suggest it has been a snare, and that lots of ex-Chianity, whether people know it or not, have been snared because they have fallen into this trap of accepting things that they're told are from God, some God, it's just not the God of the Bible, and it's been a snare. If you'll say in your heart, how can I possibly dispossess these nations that are more than us? Well, he tells us again not to be afraid of them. Remember what your Elohim did to Pharaoh and to all Egypt. You saw all of these things, and you were brought out. So will Yahuwah Eloheka do unto all the peoples of whom you are afraid. Moreover, he'll send the hornet among them until they are left, that they hide themselves and they perish from before you. Don't be afraid of them, for Yahuwah, your Elohim, is in the midst of you. He's a God great and awful, and he'll cast out those nations before you little by little. He warns them here, they're not going to be doing this real, real fast, lest the beasts of the field increase upon you. It's important that these things be done gradually. Then Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh will deliver them up, and there'll be a great discomfiture till they're destroyed. He'll deliver their kings in your hand. Their name will perish from under Hashemayim, the heavens, until no man is able to stand against you, until you've destroyed them. Now, the last two verses in chapter 7 I have highlighted, and every time the opportunity arises, I think this is so important. As a matter of fact, the next dozen or so verses is really, really key. This is my opinion. All of it is, of course, important, but in particular, it seems like it's something we need to remember today. And by the way, let me pause for a second and say this is one of those subjects that comes up fairly frequently. We have lots of people, as I'm sure you're aware, in our families and others that say, hey, you know, why don't you go to church on Sunday anymore? Maybe some folks still do. But the point is, we're understanding that he never, ever changed his Sabbath. Nothing wrong with worshiping any and every day. But on the other hand, he says, you're to keep my Sabbath. You're to set it apart. You're to hearken to my word. We'll come back to this concept again, too. So why is it that we're careful about, oh, what would seem like perfectly harmless little things, Easter eggs and bunnies and Christmas trees and Yule logs and December the 25th birthdays of, well, they just happen to be the same birthday that all these pagan sun gods throughout history have had and that never, ever were associated with the creator of the universe or his son or anything of the sort. Why are we so careful? The answer, at least it begins in these next couple of verses. Now, and I'll tell you one other thing, too. During my early period of walking and studying and beginning to see that, yeah, look at that. The things we have heard it said are not what is written. This one really kind of hit me right between the eyes, like a two before to the chops, I will sometimes refer to it. And if you see what it says in context, I hope it'll hit you the same way. It is so important. So this is one I would encourage you, point family, point friends to, and say, here is why we come out of these pagan traditions. Because the real creator and author of Scripture, the real God of the universe, doesn't just not like them. He detests them, and he tells us to avoid them. And what? Well, right here. The graven images of their gods you shall burn with fire. That sounds fairly definitive and fairly terminal, doesn't it? You shall not, he says, even covet the gold or the silver that's on them, nor take it unto you, lest you be snared therein. Boy, he's saying don't even recycle the stuff here. For it is an abomination to Yahuwah Eloheka, the Lord your God, but he has a name. It is an abomination. You are to literally burn these images with fire. And then 26, if we didn't already get it, this kind of puts the capper on it. And you shall not bring an abomination into your house. Wait a minute. I'm not supposed to bring little Buddhas, little Easter bunnies, little pagan symbols, little men hanging on crosses even, things that are made in the graven image. I'm not supposed to bring that into my house. Why does he say it if he doesn't mean it? None of these pagan things. You shall not bring an abomination to your house and be accursed like it. Again, very definitive. It's the kind of thing that when push comes to shove, you just kind of have to step back and look at it and say, well, you know, I can't hardly claim that he hasn't made it very clear. What are we to do, he says? You are to utterly detest it. Is it beginning to be clear? Why? Well, some of us, I can honestly say this. I sigh and cry at the abominations that I see. I utterly detest the Easter bunnies and eggs and pagan fertility goddess symbols that basically say, hey, we'll take what we claim on the one hand is the most important event in all of human history, and we will symbolize it with pagan things, and even rename it after a pagan goddess that our Creator says we are to abhor, hate, and not bring into our house. Utterly detest. You get the impression here he's not liking it. Utterly abhor it. Why? For it is a devoted thing, says the King Jimmy. It's a ki cherem. And that is a really strong word in the Hebrew. Devoted, I don't know, quite gets the gist of it in the English. It is devoted to Satan, if you will. It is devoted to something that is anathema to the King of the universe, to our Creator. So when he says it's devoted, yeah, it's devoted, but it sure as hell isn't devoted to him. So I hope that part is clear. All, he continues in chapter 8, all of the commandment which I command you this day, you shall observe to do, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land which Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh swore to your fathers. And you shall remember all of the way that you've been led these 40 years by Yahuwah in the wilderness, that he might afflict you, prove you, know what was in your heart, to know the following, whether you'd keep his commandments or not. By the way, if we're not keeping those last ones, if we are not understanding that when he says these things are an abomination to me, don't do them, don't even salvage the gold or silver on them, and for crying out loud, don't bring them into your house, but utterly abhor them and detest them, it's clear. He afflicted you, it says, suffered you to hunger, fed you with manna that you didn't know, nor did your fathers, that he might make you know. Now, this was a really interesting commentary. We're going to pause on this for a second, too. See if you recognize this from Sunday school, those of you that were there. He might make you know the following, that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word, debar, that proceeds out of the mouth of Yahuwah. Sounds familiar, right? Most people will know it because it's repeated at least twice in the Gospels, the apostolic writings, and it turns out these are easy ones to remember too if you don't want to look them up. It's Matthew 4:4 and Luke 4:4. That doesn't seem to happen too often where the same verse has the same verse in different places. Now, I'm going to comment on this. This may not shock you that have heard me talk about it more than once, but think about what this is saying here. Now, everybody that's been to Sunday school has probably heard this. Man does not live by bread alone, but every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. And now, the verse here in Deuteronomy actually says, out of the mouth of Yahuwah, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. I suspect that was the way that Yeshua taught it. So I'm not 100% convinced, in other words, that Matthew 4:4 and Luke 4:4 haven't been doctored, watered down just a bit. But I'm going to submit to you they have not been watered down nearly as much as what the Sunday school and the teachers in, modern church, even the evangelical church, has done. Replacement theology. This is the thing that I frequently will rail against, the idea that God can't quite make up his mind. He keeps doing away with parts of his own word and changing things. Some of the same people that will quote that verse and say, Jesus said, man does not live by bread alone, but every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. And then they will turn right around and pretend he didn't mean what he said and tell you, well, he changed the Sabbath, all this other stuff is done away with, come on, let's go to the potluck after church here and have a ham sandwich. Man does not live by bread alone, but every word that proceeds out of the mouth of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. This is that? Come on now, you're kidding me. That includes keeping the Sabbath? That includes not making these pagan idols? That includes not having ham and little shellfish, little escargot or some shrimp cocktail with our potluck? You betcha. Why would he say it if he didn't mean it? Who are we calling a liar, in other words, when we quote stuff like this and then pretend that we don't know what it says and that he doesn't know what he said because he can't keep his facts straight? Man does not live by bread alone, but by every word, not one yod or tittle of which has changed, that proceeds out of the mouth of Yahuwah. He reminds them, their clothing didn't get old, nor did their feet swell, even after 40 years. And here's an interesting comment. You are to know. King James here says, consider in your heart. But that word, the root word there is yada. Remember Seinfeld show, yada, yada, yada? It literally means to know. It was the same word that was used when Adam yada his wife. He knew his wife. It means to know in a very intimate sense. So you shall know intimately, in other words, in your heart, that just as a man chastens his son, so does Yahuwah Eloheka chasten you. Why? Because he loves you. The chastening is a sign of that. We need this chastening because we don't seem to understand that when he writes stuff down for us, it was because it's one of those words that proceeded out of his mouth that we can read, and he didn't change it. If we don't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of his mouth, let's understand those words. Let us try to know them in our heart. Now, that brings me to a brief bit of something that I have emphasized before, but it fits here. We are to know these things and keep. The next verse says, you shall keep the commandments. We already remember that the word there for commandment is mitzvot. one of several kind of legal terms that are used here. And what's the word that is to keep? Yeah, shamar. Vishamarta. Shema. That's that word means hear and obey, hearken. But I saw an interesting commentary. This comes from Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks again, who points out that if you go back and look at the Hebrew, whoops, how do we lose that? All right, we back on? There's a long lag, so we'll wait till I see the twos. Uh-oh. Till you see the ones. Okay, now, it seems like it didn't take the first time, because it was an awfully long lag. How about now? Can I have some ones? Are you hearing me again? All right. Good. All right, so we'll back up a little bit. I'm talking about this word that just seems to be so important that it appears over and over and over again. As a matter of fact, this particular account says it appears no less than 92 times, a variation, you know, you shall hear and obey, he shall hear and obey, in the future, in the past. The word is Shema, and people remember it most primarily from Shema Israel, hear and obey, O Israel. 92 times, only in the book of Devarim. It's in a whole bunch of other places too, but it's 92 times in Devarim or Deuteronomy. And this particular article does what I try to do all the time, and that's point out that we don't understand, I don't think we really, well, the word that I remember from my days as a Heinlein reader in my youth was grok in fullness. Grok is kind of like yada. It means really, really know intimately. We do not understand intimately the meaning of this word Shema because we think it means to hear. And he says, if you just look at this week's Torah portion, you'll see a number of the following. If you will hearken to these precepts, if you completely obey these instructions, laws, says King James. If you pay attention to these instructions, laws. If you heed these ordinances. And because, ekev, if only you would do this. When you do this. When you hear these things. All of those are variations of the way the English translates this single word, shamar, or shema. And Rabbi Sacks points out that if you go to biblical Hebrew, there is actually no Hebrew word that really means obey. In the modern Hebrew and in the other uses, you got this word lezayet, which is borrowed from the Aramaic that means obey. But in terms of the biblical understanding, the word is always shema. And it also has one other rendering. Now, this is what caught my eye. This is the reason why I'm going through this, because I know most of you heard me talk about this before. And when we have new people, it's always very key that that this be made as clear as we possibly can. Remember the story of the Tower of Babel in there, where it says when Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh decides that he says, we're going to come down and confuse their language so that they will not understand one another. Well, guess what? Yishmeyu is that word that gets translated as understand, but recognize the root in there? Yishmeyu. Shema. It's a variant of the same root word, understand. So it turns out that Shema not only means hear, hearken, pay attention to, listen, and obey, but also understand. And that really is the key point. And we've already seen in this portion, I just did it a second ago, this idea that consider in your heart, know in your heart, yada, that just as a man chastens his son, so Yahuwah, your Eloheka, chastens you. Because he wants you to understand. And I think that's the beautiful thing about teaching. And a man that loves his son teaches him, not just so that the son will say, yes, sir, and do it. In other words, blind obedience is not the idea here. It's not even a virtue in the Torah. The beauty, the obedience that our Creator is looking for, if you love me, keep my commands, is the kind of love and obedience and hearkening and shema-ing that comes from understanding, from truly knowing what he is looking for. And ultimately, that's the essence of why I so emphasize Torah doesn't merely mean law. Statutes, judgments, and commandments mean law. But what he's talking about here is instruction. The goal is we're not just supposed to hear it and obey it. It's even bigger than that. We're supposed to shema, to understand, and to do because we love him. And I like this. He wants us to understand his instruction, the things he's commanded us. Reflect on it. Listen, reflect, understand, internalize, respond. Here's how Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks puts it. He wants us to become a listening people. I like that. We are to seek, to strive, if we're going to be good and faithful servants, I like that terminology too, to become a listening people. To listen to God is to be open to God. It's a spiritual act. That's why Moshe keeps saying throughout this book, if you would only listen, if you just listen, if you just shema, then the rest of these things will follow. And I'm going to tell a story that I thought was kind of cute in here. It's not my story, and it's not even his story, but it helps to make this point. But I want to read one more verse, too. I've already alluded to it once. The one that we're kind of up to here is verse 6. So it's Deuteronomy 8, verse 6. And you shall keep, yep, there's that word, shema, ve shamarta, the commandments of Yahuwah Eloheka, to walk in his ways, there's an action verb, and to fear him. And as I read that, I'm thinking about all these places in the so-called New Testament, in the apostolic writings, where we see Yahushua making exactly the same point. He comes to speak, to teach the words from the Father, the things that were written down then that are still written down for us today, to bring them to literally a place of filling us up with the understanding. Why? So that we can not only shamar, but know, have that understanding, if we will listen and consider in our heart. So I've mentioned it before. John 14, 15. By the way, one of the things that I think is kind of neat is that the proper Torah portion tonight, with Ikev, a lot of times people will point to various places in Scripture that go with it. For example, the Haftorah is from Isaiah 49 through basically all of chapter 50. That's interesting, and if we have time, we'll at least touch on some of that tonight. But the reading from the apostolic writings is in the book of John, Yohanan, but I like Yohanan better because it's... this idea of the grace, Yahu Hanan. And that, of course, includes probably my favorite verse in all of the apostolic writings. If you love me, keep my sayings, keep my teaching, keep my commandments. And that's what this verse is literally repeating. You are to keep the commandments of Yahuwah Eloheka, to walk in his ways, and to fear him. For he's bringing you into a good land, land of brooks of water, fountains, springs, springing forth in valleys and hills, of wheat and barley, vines and fig trees, a lot of good stuff where you'll eat bread without scarceness. You'll eat and be satisfied, and then you will bless. Barach. Yahuwah Eloheka, for the good land which he has given you. Now, there's a beware line coming up. We'll come back to that in a second. But I promised I was going to tell this story, which I found interesting, on this concept of listening. Really kind of helps to put this in perspective. And one of the things that that this article that I'm looking at here from Rabbi Sacks is talking about is leadership. Moshe was a leader, and he closes with kind of a cute point about Moshe. Remember when he says, I'm not a man of words. I'm not eloquent. And I'm slow of speech and tongue. And why would he choose a man to lead the people of Israel who found it hard to speak? Well, perhaps, say some of the sages, because one who cannot speak had better learn how to listen. And maybe that's what really makes a good leader. Because listening is a profound affirmation of the humanity of other folks. So here's the story that I promised I would tell. This has to do with listening, and I think it really, when it comes to this idea of shamar, sometimes the story helps to put into our understanding things that all these other synonyms might not: hearken, completely obey, pay attention to, heed, even understand and hear. There was a fellow named, some of you will know, Viktor Frankl. He was an Auschwitz survivor. He went on to create a new form of psychotherapy based on a man's search for meaning. And he tells the story of one of his patients, once upon a time, who phoned him in the middle of the night to tell him calmly that she was intending, right then and there, to commit suicide. So he says that he kept her on the phone for 2 full hours, giving her every conceivable reason he could possibly imagine to live. And eventually, she said to him, well, she changed her mind. She would not end her life after all. Mission accomplished. Great. Thank you. Praise Yah. So, time passes. The next time he sees the woman, he asked her, hey, I'm curious, which of the many reasons that he had given her had persuaded her to change her mind? I love the response. None of them. Well, why then did you decide not to commit suicide? Her answer? Well, the fact that someone was prepared to listen to her for 2 hours in the middle of the night convinced her that her life just might be worth living after all. Amen. Praise Yah. Listening is intensely therapeutic, is the conclusion here. So, again, I don't have a problem with all of this background with translating the word shamar as listen if we understand the deeper meaning. What does it really mean to listen, hearken, hear, obey, seek to understand? And that's kind of the key of the whole first section of this. All right, got a question from Roz. Maybe 2 questions. Okay, Mark, what version are you reading from, I think? What version did I eat? Anyway, what version am I reading from? Well, I call this the King James-ish translation, and by and large, it is pretty similar to the King James. The specific one that I usually look at, because I like it, because it has Hebrew in one column on the left side and the English on the other column on the right side. Makes it easy for me, who is kind of at a, you know, maybe I could claim I'm up to third grade level in Hebrew by now if I'm being charitable. But at least the words are side by side, so I can follow it easily and look across and read the Hebrew. But this is called the Mechan Mamre translation, and it's not exactly word for word the King James, but by and large it is. And if anything, it's probably what you might call a modern English variation of the King James. 9 times out of 10, they'll use the same word King James does. So there was another question too.
Yes, Jay, we'll
put that on the screen. Okay, on verse 8.
8:3, the word is in italics in King James.
Oh, meaning that it was added?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at it here. A man does not live by bread alone. Kol motzah. I have to get my dictionary out and check that. Kol motza piyuhua.
What does it say in the English in that?
Okay, this rendering says by everything that proceeds out of the mouth of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. And usually that word is debar, and I'm looking for it here, and I'm not seeing it. So that might be.
That's
why they've put it in italics to add it in. Halechem. Yeah, okay. So anyway, everything that proceeds out of the mouth of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. Interesting point. Have to come back and take a look at that one again later. Yeah. Well, and you'll see that... this is one of those places where it's really interesting to compare the Greek to English from the Hebrew or one variant of the translation into English and see, because you know that at least what Yahushua was quoting would have been the Hebrew original. At least I take that understanding to heart. Right, but he would be quoting, in other words, this verse is what I'm trying to say. Okay, any other questions? Let's go back then to chapter. We got a ways to go, and I probably won't emphasize the rest of it quite as hard as all of this. Beware, says verse 11 in chapter 8, lest you forget Yahuwah Eloheka in not keeping his commandments and, what else, his ordinances and his statutes. You know the words by now, hopefully. Which I command you this day, so that when you have eaten and you're satisfied and you've built some nice houses and you've dwelt in them, when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and your gold is multiplied and everything that you have is multiplied. In other words, stuff's looking pretty good. That your heart might be lifted up and you forget the source of your bounty. Who it is that brought you forth out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage, who led you through the wilderness, and the fiery serpents and the scorpions and the thirsty ground with no water, who brought forth water out of the rock of flint, who fed you in the wilderness with manna, which your fathers knew not, all of those things that he repeats again, so that he might prove you and do good to you in your latter end. And if all of this bad stuff doesn't register, you might say in your heart, my power and my hand, the might of my hand, have gotten all of this wealth to me. Bad mistake. You shall remember that Yahuwah Eloheka, it's he that's given you the power to get wealth, that he might establish his covenant which he swore to your fathers, as it is in this day. And it will come to pass that if, key word here, if you forget it's Yahuwah Eloheka, the Lord your God, who is doing this, and you begin to walk after other gods? This is, again, part of the reason why I emphasize the failure. And I'm going to say it real bluntly. I don't know any other way to do it. The failure of modern ex-Christianity, evangelical or Catholic or otherwise, to recognize exactly this point. You do not mix. You do not say, oh, God knows my heart. He doesn't mind if I bring these idols into my house. He doesn't mind if I change the day of his Passover. He doesn't mind if I change the day of his Sabbath. Excuse me, but the hell he doesn't. He's told you in no uncertain terms. It shall be if you forget him and walk after other gods with names like, well, you know the names, Ishtar for one. And all kinds of other pagan gods and goddesses. A lot of times people forget the names. They just keep the wonderful traditions, like Lent and Tammuz and the Easter ham and so forth. And if you keep them and serve them and worship them, I forewarn you. By the way, he was right. It did happen exactly as he foretold. You will surely perish. As the nations that Yahuwah has made to perish before you, so will you perish, because you wouldn't hearken unto the voice of Yahuwah Eloheka. Now, at this point, we'll take that real brief digression into at least a tiny part of the Haftorah portion, just so if nothing else we can remember what it's about. Chapter 49, where the Haftorah begins, is entitled in this New King James here, The Servant, the Light to the Gentiles, to the Nations. I think that's a much better rendering of that. And then it flows into chapter 50, where it says, The Servant is the hope of Israel. And thus says Yahuwah. He asks a question. Where is the certificate, Sefer Keretuta is the Hebrew, of your mother's divorce, of her putting away, whom I have put away? Where's the get, in other words, of your mother? Not speaking to the northern kingdom. Remember, the northern kingdom was the first to fall into idolatry and to be put away. Where's the get, he asks, of which of my creditors is it to whom I have sold you? For your iniquities, you have sold yourselves, and for your transgressions has your mother, has Israel, been put away. When I called, there was no one to answer. My hand, is it shortened, that I cannot redeem? Do I have no power to deliver? He rebukes. He makes this point. And tells people, of course, the end is generally similar throughout all of these things, teshuvah. Who among you fears Yahuwah, says verse 10, who obeys the voice of his servant? Well, let him trust in the name of Yahuwah and rely upon his Elohim. Same message. And it's the same message that they're literally being warned about here. And of course, Moshe, as well as, people later learned, they would fall away. They would, in fact, take these other gods, just like the evangelical, the Catholic, the other churches have done. They have mixed, they have added these pagan things in, and they have been snared by them, trapped by them. And they have perished as a result. And by the way, we're fixing to see another repetition of that cycle. Chapter 9, "Hear, O Israel, Shema, Israel, you are to pass over Jordan this day, to go in and dispossess nations greater and mightier than yourself, cities fortified up to heaven, and all of these big dudes, the sons of the Anakim, who you know, and whom you've heard said, who can stand before the sons of Anak? So know this day that it's Yahuwah Eloheka, it's He who goes over before you as a devouring fire. He will destroy them." Hey, don't be thinking, by the way, that you did this any more than you built those fine houses and stuff. It's the same general concept. He's going to do this. All you got to do is just be along for the ride and give him the credit. "He will bring them down before you so you can drive them out, make them perish quickly, as he has spoken to you. Don't say in your heart, after he's thrust them out from before you, saying, 'For my righteousness has Yahuwah brought me in to possess this land.' By now you ought to know better. 'Not for your righteousness or for the uprightness of your heart do you go in to possess their land, but for the wickedness of these nations did he drive them out from before you.'" Now, there again, object lesson for today. We'll get to this when we talk about the news. But when I keep hammering, and when in fact I hammer because he hammers on the fact that we're not to take their idols to heart, we're not to worship their gods. We're not to say, "Hey, how did these nations worship their gods? How did they keep the feast of Lent, that 40 days, like they were worshiping and mourning for Tammuz? And how did they do the sun god and the Easter sunrise services and the bunnies and the eggs and the Yule logs and the trees and all of those other good things? Bobbing for apples at Halloween. Don't do any of that jazz. Not for your righteousness. It was because they were nasty and evil and they did all these things that he hates that he drove them out from before you. So now, therefore," verse 6, "it's not for your righteousness that Yahuwah has given you this land, because," for crying out loud, and this still applies, folks, I'll say it, "we are a stiff-necked people." Don't forget how Yahuwah was wroth with you. He was kind of peeved in the wilderness from the day that you came forth till you got here, because you've been rebellious against Yahuwah, and it wasn't just the people of Israel, Kol Israel. It's been their descendants, both northern and southern kingdoms, Exchins, Gentiles, and Jews alike, and all of those that have been scattered and don't even know who they are still. He repeats over and over again a couple of other things. "In Horeb, you torqued him off. He was angry enough with you to have destroyed you. Moshe said he was gone up to receive the tables of stone. He abode there 40 days and 40 nights, didn't drink bread or eat water. And what happened? What did y'all do when I was away?" Right? You know the story. Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh delivered unto me, says Moses, those two tablets of stone written with the very finger of God, all of these Deborim, which he spoke to you out of the fire in the day of assembly. I came down the hill. I was told, 'Hey, arise, get down there quickly, because your people..." Remember that joke from Bill Cosby? Your people down there, they have dealt corruptly. They've turned aside already. The ink's not even dry. The dust isn't even blown off the stones here. And they're already committing adultery, idolatry. They've made a molten image. Furthermore, says Moshe to them then, and it's still appropriate today, Yahuwah spoke to me saying, I've seen this people. Check it out, man. They are a stiff-necked people. Let me alone that I may destroy them, blot their names out from under heaven, and I'll make from you, Moses, a nation mightier and greater than they. So Moshe tells about how, he got angry. He smashed the two tables. And then he came down before Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. He interceded on behalf of all of Israel. Went back up 40 more days, 40 more nights. Yeah, you can almost hear Moses thinking, no more bread, no more water. Got to do this again. How many of you would be willing to go twice, 40 days and 40 nights, without food and water? During which, and for doing that which was evil in the sight of Yahuwah to provoke him, I was in dread of the anger of his hot displeasure, says Moses, wherewith he was pretty well peeved at you to destroy you. But he hearkened unto me that time also. By the way, he says he was kind of upset with Aaron, too. I prayed for Aaron at the same time. I took your sin, the calf which you had made. Here comes a story that I won't belabor at this point. He describes what he did with it. He beat it into pieces. He ground it very small. He put it in that dust of the brook that descended out of the mount, and he made them drink it. And at Taberah, and at Massah, and at Kibroth Hataava, you made him angry again. So, when he sent you out from Kadesh Barnea, saying, go up and possess the land which I have given you, and then you rebelled against the commandment of Yahuwah, you didn't believe him. In other words, you weren't willing to truly believe him enough. We're not talking about, does God exist? For crying out loud, that would have been painfully obvious. No, we're talking about, do you believe him? Do you trust in him? Do you emuna? Do you faith in him enough to walk in obedience, to hearken to, yep, here comes that word again, to Shema, to him? You've been rebellious against Yahuwah from the day I knew you, says Moshe. So, I fell down 40 more days and nights because Yahuwah had said he would destroy you. Remember your servants, I implored him, Abraham, Isaac, and Yaakov. Look not unto the stubbornness of this people, nor their wickedness, nor their sin. And he reminded the creator of the universe of his promises. Chapter 10 says, at that time, Yahuwah then said to me, okay, go get yourself two more tablets of stone, just like the first ones. Come up to me on the mount and make a wooden ark, by the way, a box to put them in. I'll write on those tables the words that were on the first ones, which you broke, and you can put them in that box, that ark. So says Moshe, I made that ark out of acacia wood, made more tablets, went up the mountain with both of them in my hand. He wrote on them, just like he did the first time. I came down, put those tables in the ark, which I'd made, and there they are, as Yahuwah has commanded me. Then there's some more journeys. He describes the journeys, the separation of the tribe of Levi to bear the ark of the covenant of Yahuwah, stand before him, minister to him, bless in his name. Just like it is at the time when he's speaking here. That's why Levi has no portion with his brothers. Now he says, I stayed in the mountain, as at the first time, 40 days, 40 nights, and he hearkened, he listened to me that time too. He wouldn't destroy you. And Yahuwah said unto me, arise, go before the people, causing them to set forward, that they may go in and possess the land which I swore unto their fathers to give to them. Now, verse 12 here. Chapter 10, verse 12, Devarim. If you don't have this one highlighted, highlight it in your books now too. And now, he says, Moshe speaking, Israel, what does Yahuwah Eloheka require of you? But to fear Yahuwah Eloheka, to walk. There's a do, an action verb. To walk in all of his ways and to love him. Achav is the root there. And to serve Yahuwah Eloheka with all your heart and with all your soul. You know what, folks? That sounds to me, again, a lot like a repetition of if you love me, keep my commandments. This is another one of those places where I will take issue, if you will, with the standard evangelical teaching. Oh, not by works, lest any man should boast, but by faith alone. It's not a matter of what you do. Doesn't matter at all. I will say that such people that repeat tripe like that, they don't understand what Paul has written for them, A, and B, they don't understand simple logic. Yeah. What has Moshe just been telling these folks? Look, you were dead men walking. I interceded for you. Yahuwah was reminded of his own promises, and that is out of his grace, out of his mercy, out of his forgiveness, that he didn't whack you all then. I'll say the same thing going back to Genesis, Bereshit chapter 3. He knew the end from the beginning. It was grace way back then that he didn't whack Adam and Chava, Eve. The reason why we have the whole rest of the book is because he loves us. Hanan, it's grace. Moshe, others before him. Noah comes to mind, who found grace, Hanan, in the eyes of Yahuwah. There's nothing new, folks, about grace. The new covenant, too, is really a renewed covenant. Same old covenant, same one we're talking about here. If you will hearken to me, I will love you, and I'll keep you, and I'll set you apart, and I'll do all of these things that I promise. I will bless you. I'll bring you into the land. It'll be better than you can imagine. What does he require? If you love me, keep my commandments. It's not that you can earn salvation. Lose that line. You cannot earn salvation, so you might as well just not try. Sit on your you-know-what all day long, eat bonbons, and then have your get-out-of-hell card handy. I said the prayer once upon a time, don't have to do anything since then. Bull. That's one of the most abominable teachings in all of ex-Christianity, along with the whole idea that you can do all this pagan stuff, and he doesn't mind that when he says otherwise. And then they'll turn around, like I've mentioned, and quote, "A man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, some of which, we think, might still apply." Not all of them. Come on. And now, Israel, what does Yahuwah Eloheka require of you? What does he require of you? Fear him? Walk in some of his ways, when you feel like it? No, walk in all of his ways and to love him. How do you know you love him? We've just got the answer. It was repeated for us in John 14:15. If you love me, keep my commandments. You notice what it doesn't say? This is why I talk about conditionals and people not understanding simple logic. It doesn't say, if you keep my commandments, then I will love you. He loves us anyway. Praise Yah. It doesn't say, if you keep my commandments, then you get to heaven. No, it says nothing of the sort. He loves us, that's why we're here. What it says is, if we love him, what is our reasonable service? If he has done all this good stuff for us, what's our reasonable service? Answer, to love him, to serve Yahuwah Eloheka with all of our heart and with all of our soul, nefesh. This is plain stuff written in the book of Deuteronomy. You do not have to go to John 1:1 and read the New Testament alone. It is a repetition. It is a line-by-line, precept-by-precept enhancement, filling out of all of the information there. If we didn't get it the first, the second, the 32nd, the 42nd, the 77th time he told us, he tells us again in the apostolic writings. But basically, it's the same simple thing. Now, Israel, what is necessary? It's not that you're going to do this and earn salvation. Let's drop that whole silly notion. What does Yahuwah Eloheka require of you? What is your reasonable service? To fear him. Walk in all of his ways, all of them. Love him and serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. Shema Israel. It's another repetition. Verse 13, to keep for your good. Not because you can earn salvation, because it's a good thing to do. Because if you do this stuff, you'll be blessed. You won't even be able to understand how many blessings will be heaped upon you. To keep for your good the commandments of Yahuwah and his statutes, huchot, mitzvot, and so forth, which I command you this day. Behold, to him belong the heavens, the heaven of heavens, the earth, and everything that there's in. He had a delight in your fathers to love them. He chose their seed after them, even you above all peoples, as it is this day. So circumcise, therefore, the foreskin of your hearts. Don't be stiff-necked anymore. For Yahuwah, your Eloheka, he is Elohim of Elohim, Lord of lords, the great God, the mighty, the awful, who regards not persons nor takes rewards. He executes justice for the fatherless and the widow. He loves the stranger, gives him food and raiment. So therefore, love the stranger, for you too were strangers in the land of Mitzrayim. You shall fear Yahuwah Eloheka. Him you shall serve, to him you shall cleave, by his name you shall swear. He's your glory, your Elohim. He's done for you these great and tremendous things which your eyes have seen. Now, we have not seen them, but we have a very good witness here, written in genuine print, preserved for us for thousands of years. Your fathers went down to Egypt, 70 persons, and now they're like the stars of the heaven for multitude. Then chapter 11 begins to wrap up and essentially repeats, as if we needed it. Hey, do we really? Yeah. Therefore, you shall love Yahuwah your Eloheka, keep his charge, his statutes, his ordinances, his commandments, always. Ha-Amim. Every word. Man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. How many times in this one portion has he repeated these very words so that just maybe, because we're still stiff-necked, we'll get it? You shall love him, and therefore keep, shemar, his charge, his statutes, his ordinances, his commandments. Always. And know this day, says Moshe, for I don't speak with you, your children, that have not known, that have not seen the chastisement of the Lord your God, his greatness, his mighty hand, his outstretched arm, his signs, his works that he did in the midst of Egypt, and what he did to the army of Pharaoh, and what he did to you in the wilderness till you came here, and what he did to Dathan and Abiram. He's recounting more of the stories. But your eyes have seen all of the great work that he did. So therefore, again, I think Moses gets it. He's been listening. He knows. He's seen, too. Better repeat this. Better keep hammering on this. Again, he already knows what Isaiah and Jeremiah and Hosea and Ezekiel and Micah and Amos and Joel and a whole bunch of others are going to point out throughout the centuries to come. Y'all are going to keep needing reminding. Teshuvah, you're going the wrong way. Turn around, come back. You fall into idolatry. You fall into this trap. Happens. Cycle after cycle. Season after season. Therefore you shall keep all this commandment which I command you this day, that you can be strong, go in and possess the land, that you may prolong your days upon the land which you swore to your fathers, this land flowing with milk and honey. The land when you go in to possess, it's not like Mitzrayim from where you came out, where you sowed your seed, you did all this stuff, but this land that you go over to possess is a land of hills and valleys. Drinketh water as the rains of heaven come down. It's a land for which Yahuwah Eloheka cares for. For the eyes of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, your God, are always upon it, from the beginning of the year even unto the end. It will come to pass, listen again, if you what? Say it with me, folks. Shema. Hearken. Listen. Understand. Walk, obey, do. If you shall hearken diligently, Shema, and in the Hebrew this one is Teshma'u. It's the plural form, future tense. Same root though. If, when the time comes, you all in the future will hearken unto the commands which I command you this day to serve, to love him with all your heart, with all your soul, then all these good things will fall. I'll give you rain, former rain, the latter rain. You'll gather in your corn, your wine, your oil, grass for your cattle. You'll eat and be satisfied. Take heed, lest your heart be deceived. One more warning, and you turn to other gods and serve and worship them, and the anger of Yahuwah be kindled against you, so that he shuts up the heavens, no rain. The ground won't yield its fruit, and you perish quickly from off the good land which he's given you. Therefore, you shall lay up my words, Debarim, in your heart and in your soul. Bind them. This sounds a lot like Shema Israel, doesn't it? For a sign upon your hand, and let them be as frontlets between your eyes. And teach them to your children, talking of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way, when you rise up and when you lie down. You can almost do it from memory, right? You shall write them upon the doorposts of your house and on your gates, that your days may be multiplied, and the days of your children, upon the land which he swore to your fathers to give them, as the days of the heavens above the earth. For if you will diligently keep this commandment, which I command you, to do it, to ahav, to love Yahuwah Eloheka, to walk in all of his ways and to cleave to him, then all this stuff will happen. He'll drive out the nations before you. They're bigger, tougher, stronger than you. Every place where the sole of your foot treads will be yours. All these places, the wilderness to Lebanon, the river Euphrates, even under the hinder sea, shall be your border. Guess what? Remember, the borders that were originally promised have never, ever yet been fully achieved. No man will be able to stand against you. Yahuwah Eloheka shall lay the fear of you and the dread upon upon all the land that you tread upon, just as he has spoken to you. Just as he has spoken to you. within this portion alone, we've got this repeated set of understandings, Shema. It is so important. Hearken, listen, understand. Why do we walk in obedience? Because we're afraid of him? Well, in part, that's part of the reason that a son obeys his father. A better reason, because the son who loves his father has been chastened by the father, because the father who loves his son chastens him. We're a stiff-necked people. Always have been. It does take repetition. It does take a little chastening, sometimes a lot of chastening, for us to get the message. We make the same mistakes over and over. We see Moshe repeating the same admonitions over and over. And I look out today, and we'll talk about it when we get to the news, and I see around us in society today the same problems, the same idolatry, although admittedly it's probably worse than it's been. Because this snare, this trap that's been set, well, it's yielding fruit at this point. We've got lots of people, nominal Christians, and I use the term extion. That upsets some folks. Well, so be it. So be it. If you're mixing the pagan, the unclean, with the kadosh, the set apart, the holy, it is abomination. I tell the joke, it's funny, but it's true. What do you get when you mix 9 gallons of great creamy chocolate ice cream with 1 gallon of the runny brown stuff that the dog left in the backyard? Answer, 10 gallons of dog poop. You understand the point? You mix even 1 part in 10 or less of poison, of utter crapola, with something which is set apart and wonderful and pure, it becomes utter crapola. It's a lie. This is why our Creator says, don't do it. Utterly abhor their gods and all of the images of their gods and all the trappery and effrontery and paganism and crap. Detest it. Burn it with fire. Hate it. But for crying out loud, don't bring it into your house. It's a trap. It has been. And it has been again. And we live in a land that has been full of that trap and that crap. And I know that's an offensive word. So be it. Because that's what we've brought into our houses, along with the Christmas trees and the Ishtar eggs and the bunnies. And all of the BS. That while we say, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, we don't even know his name anymore. Because we've been told it doesn't matter. We've been told that he changes his mind. In other words, we've been lied to. Let God be true and every man a liar? Well, it's close. But it's the same old story. It's why there's so much repetition here. It's why I'm repeating it too. This is important stuff. This is the kind of stuff that really represents life and death. This is the kind of stuff that after one more song here, we're going to talk about in the news, that I think is so key. Now, as we begin to see certain things playing out, we understand, maybe, just why this is life and death, and just why it is that if we really want to live, if we want to be counted worthy to escape these things that are coming upon the earth, we had truly better learn to hearken to Kol of his Devarim, so that we can say we love him and serve him with all of our heart and with all of our soul. It's a tall order, because we've inherited a whole lot of lies from our fathers.